Welcome to the Kona Edge, where you'll discover what the best triathletes in the world do to give them the edge.
Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge. I'm Brad Brown. It is Wednesday as we record this. If you're listening to it on the day we release, I hope your week is going well. We've got a pretty cool story to share with you once again today, and we head to a magnificent part of the world. I've never been there, but it is definitely on my list of places where I want to go, and the good news is there's an Ironman event there, so it's another good reason to go. But I live in a pretty special place in Cape Town in South Africa. It's magnificent, it's gorgeous, it's just stunning. Weather today, just so you know, it's middle of May, which technically should be our winter, and we are going through a pretty bad drought at the moment. So winter's normally our sort of rainfall period, and we haven't had any rain. I know there's some scheduled for tonight, but as I look out my window, not a cloud in the sky. Absolutely gorgeous. I'm sitting here in flip-flops and short sleeves and just got back from a run. So, yeah, life is good at the moment. But our guest today lives pretty much off the Great Barrier Reef in Australia, does a lot of his work on that reef as well. It's a tough life, but I guess someone's got to do it. And as I mentioned too, they've got an Ironman race on their doorstep, Ironman Cairns. So a wonderful place to live, I have no doubt. And it is high up on my list of places I want to visit. I think diving that Great Barrier Reef would definitely be something I think everyone should do before they kick the bucket. But yeah, we're going to be touching base with Damien Coad today to talk a little bit about his story and his journey to the Ironman World Championships on the Big Island. Before we do that, though, been getting tons of great feedback via various platforms on social media and email of just triathletes from around the globe who are really enjoying the platform. Thanks for your feedback. I love hearing it. Keep them coming. The email is brad@thekonaedge.com. That comes straight into my inbox. And if you'd like to touch base on Facebook, the URL to get to is quite long, so the easiest way to do it is head over to thekonaedge.com/Facebook. It'll take you straight to that private Facebook group. Just request to join. I'll add you and get involved and start chatting. Very, very cool group of triathletes in there, let me tell you. So that's thekonaedge.com/Facebook. I also released a podcast on our exclusive patron feeds a little bit earlier on today. If you're not a patron of the Kona Edge, I'd really appreciate it if you would consider supporting the Kona Edge and keeping the lights on. But we've got some very exciting developments in the pipeline. I mentioned it to our patrons two weeks ago, that I'm chatting to someone about doing something. And it looks like it's going to happen. So if you want to find out more about it, I'm super stoked. You have no idea how excited I'm about this. And there's something else on top of it that was added this morning. So go and check out that patron-only or exclusive patron feed. Just head over to thekonaedge.com/support. That's where you can pledge your support. Literally $1 a month is what you can start at. So obviously you can do more if you feel the need. But yeah, definitely helps keep the lights on. And I appreciate all the support of all the patrons who are part of the show and keeping the show alive. So thank you for that. But we're going to be chatting to Damien in just a moment. Before that, though, let's take a look at our coach's call. It's time for today's Coach's Corner. If you're an athlete looking for a coach, it doesn't matter where you are in the world, we've got access to some of the best triathlon and Ironman coaches around. If you'd like to find out more or hook up with one of our coaches, whether you need help with a swim, bike, run, or nutrition, all you have to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. You can get all the details there. Check out all the coaches that we've got access to. And don't forget, too, if you are a coach and you would like to get access to the podcast and get a bit of a plug on the podcast, all you have to do is head over to that same URL, okay? It's thekonaedge.com/coaching. Scroll down to the bottom of the page and you can get all the details there. So that's thekonaedge.com/coaching. Straight into today's episode, and we head to Australia now to catch up with Damien Coad. Damien, welcome onto the Kona Edge.
Thanks for having me, Brad.
Damien, your sort of entry into the sport's been quite an interesting one because you live in Cairns, which is, I don't know if that's a blessing in disguise or if it's not, because you're literally on the doorstep of an Ironman race.
Yes, that's true. I'm very lucky to live up here in Cairns, and then when just the place itself with the beautiful scenery and the people up here, And then, of course, with the Ironman event being up here, yeah, really blessed to have that right in our backyard. So, yeah, loving it.
And that was essentially your first introduction to Ironman, and having it on your doorstep. You volunteered before you started racing yourself. Tell us a little bit about your first sort of Ironman experience.
Yeah, that was an opportunity that arose through my boss at work. He approached me. He knew I loved watching Ironman. I loved running. I loved trail running. So he had an opportunity to volunteer himself, so he asked if I wanted to, and we had a good gig as the cyclists that ride with the lead runners or the lead Ironmen and half Ironmen and women, and I was lucky enough to be the rider for the lead 70.3 athlete that was back in 2013 was Sam Warriner, as she come off the bike out of transition onto the run. And yeah, it was quite an inspirational experience to ride next to her or behind her, sometimes in front of her, and see what she was able to do, given that she'd just had a baby 6 months earlier in the year.
It's incredible. Was it on that bike ride you decided, you know what, I want to do this?
Oh, definitely. I think back then the race was designed so that you ran from out of town and you ran into town before doing a loop for the full Ironman, and then for the half you just ran into town, and cycling in front of Sam, coming into the lined streets full of locals and family of all the contestants cheering. I think I may have gotten carried away thinking they were cheering me on. So I don't know if I rode ahead of her a bit too far, but there was an urge to go faster, even though I was just a volunteer. But I can tell you that as soon as I finished, I gave her a hug and promised myself that I'd be here as an athlete the following year.
And that's the way it played out. I mean, that's an incredible experience that I don't think too many people get to experience. I think a lot of Ironman athletes are exposed to the sport as a volunteer, and it might be working at an aid station or in the changing tent or whatever it is. But being on that bicycle up front, I mean, I get goosebumps just thinking about it. It must be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's on a... Being my first experience of Ironman, I still equate it with being as good as actually finishing an Ironman myself, just that I was totally taken aback by the atmosphere and just the amount of participation and cheering that every athlete got, not just the professionals, not just the leaders, but just every single athlete that participated. So, yeah, it's just a great atmosphere and environment.
Yeah, I want to urge people, if you've never volunteered at an Ironman, like maybe you got an injury and you can't train for a race for whatever reason, just go and go and offer your services. I was lucky enough a couple of years ago to be the race announcer alongside Paul Kay at Ironman South Africa. And it was the most incredible experience. I loved it, but I loved racing more because I love that feeling. And I can tell you, being on that red carpet for 8 to 9 hours, just welcoming everybody home and almost experiencing their finish with them, I get exactly what you're saying, Damien. It does equate to you feeling it and having that high. I mean, that's why I've got so much respect for guys like Paul Kay and Mike Riley who have to lift themselves week in and week out to do that, because just it's such an emotional drain and you're on such a high. And then when you finish it, to come down is ridiculous. I mean, it's like you finishing a race, which is something special. But let's take a step back and talk about your sporting pedigree, so to speak. Were you pretty active and sporty growing up?
Yeah, Brad, I did love my sport. I played a lot of different sports. I was a swimmer from a young age and swam competitively from when I was 10 or 11 at sort of state level, and then my parents moved. We moved to the country And unfortunately, I had been invited to go to the Institute of Sport in Canberra, but my parents wanted me to go with them to the country. So that opened up. I stopped swimming, and it opened up AFL football, basketball, tennis, all these other individual and team sports, which, you know, I have obviously, you know, I loved. I made a lot of good friends. I still love those sports. I don't get to play them these days, just from an injury aspect. But yeah, footy, basketball, tennis, any sport I could play that was around at the time I took up. I was addicted to anything, whether it was a ball sport or something that required endurance. I always ran every day. Just because it was an instinctive thing for me to do, whether I was training for a game coming up or whether I was out of season, I always had the need to go running.
As far as the other sports, I mean, you mentioned you were a fairly competitive swimmer, but were you any good at the others? I mean, as far as being good, you obviously were competitive as well. I mean, that I think goes without saying. In order to be top in any sport, you have to have that competitive streak.
Yeah, you're right. I think the underlying, I guess, characteristic is the competitive streak I've always had in me. So, yeah, I played in a few premierships for football in under-16, under-18s, and a few premierships for basketball and A-grade in tennis. And so I love ball sports, and I really enjoy the team aspect. But I think what got me through being reasonable at all of them was my competitiveness just kept me in my determination, and so that transferred into I was always quick and I just ran nonstop, no matter whether it was basketball or football or on the court with tennis. So I think it was certainly my endurance or stamina and mixed with the competitive streak that allowed me to celebrate a few wins with my mates, yeah.
Coming from a bit of a team sport background too, where you have played those, is that one thing you miss about triathlon? Because it is very individual, although you can be part of a club and have people around you, but on race day itself, it's about you and what you can do?
Yeah, that's true. I think on the day itself, everything is it's entirely up to you. Everything is within your control, and that's what I like about the sport, is that you have control over a large, everything that you can do. Obviously, there are things you have no control over, whether it be, unexpected mechanical breakdowns or weather. But at the end of the day, you can control a lot of it. And I really do enjoy competing out there on my own for long periods of time. I enjoy training on my own, but having said that, look, I've got great friends that I've met through the sport. My partner, I met her primarily through the sport, and I think that's more than anything, the sport's given me that more than anything.
You talk about meeting your partner through the sport. At least your partner then knew what they were getting themselves in for, because I think a lot of people come to the sport, they're already in an established relationship, and all of a sudden they get sucked into this cult, and their life changes, and it's quite interesting. As far as getting that balance right, talk to me about work-wise and family life and how you juggle everything you do. What do you do for a living, Damien?
I work for a large diving operation up here in Cairns, ProDive Cairns. I've been with them since about 2011. I've worked as an instructor, a skipper, the HR manager, and during the peak of during most of my Ironman competition as a marine operations manager. So I was responsible for, just making sure the boats are maintained and We had refits and refurbishments on the vessels. We have three liverboard boats that take people out to the Great Barrier Reef. So balancing that work, it was, I had a work phone with me 24/7, so I could get calls any time of the day or night. So it was always tricky trying to work out my training schedule, but since the beginning or the end of last year, the beginning of this year, I've taken a step back from managing to working in the ProDive Cairns retail store. So I have fixed hours that are predictable. I finish my day and can forget about any potential problems with work. I can schedule my training a lot better, get more sleep, a lot less stress. And so I think the balance is there for me to now move forward and really try and convert that into some more performances. Yeah.
That's the key, isn't it? You mentioned balance, and I think that's one thing that a lot of age groupers, particularly age groupers who are trying to get better and qualify for the world champs, that's something they really struggle with.
Yeah, look, I am in complete admiration for those top age group, well, any age group really, that have a family to take care of as well and juggling their work demands. I'm in complete awe of them for just finishing an Ironman, let alone those that are competing at a top level. So my hat's always off to them. A huge amount of respect goes there.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You talk about the change in work situation. I think a lot of people, you can't control your sort of work environment, but I think a lot of employers today are a lot more open to the fact of allowing people to work remotely as long as the work still gets done, which you can then sort of schedule training around and that time that you would maybe spend commuting, you could then essentially spend training, even if you do it a day or two a week. It's always worthwhile sitting down and looking and trying to simplify your life, essentially, and especially when it comes to work.
Yeah, I was extremely lucky. My immediate boss at ProDive Cairns is an ex-Ironman competitor. He's incredibly sympathetic and understanding of what my work demand, well, of what my training demands were outside of work. So he did give me a great deal of freedom, and I think that really made a big difference to helping me to being able to compete well. So a lot of gratitude there, but ultimately I think you've really got to decide just how committed you want to be, what you really want, how bad you want it, and then make the changes, get that balance, and like you said, sit down and work out what you need to do.
And the truth of the matter is you can't do everything. So certain things do need to be sacrificed, and it might mean drinks down the pub with your mates twice a week. That might be it. And if you're willing to give that up, then that's cool. But, Damien, let's talk about racing and your first Ironman experience. Can you – I mean, your first one, something you – I don't think you ever forget. Tell me a little bit about your first one.
Yeah, it was Ironman Cairns 2014, and it's a bit of a blur apart from the finishing shoot, but I loved it. It rained, it was windy, the swim went forever and ever. But my nutrition wise, I think I had two or three long toilet stops. But the local support, and as I mentioned before, when I was a volunteer, just this time as a local competitor now, I just made everything worth it. And by the end of it, I felt like a whole new world had opened up for me, and it was going to be the start of another big adventure in my life. Yeah, it was awesome.
How did you go in that first one from a time perspective?
Oh, not too bad. I think I did bang on 10 hours, and I had absolutely no idea what sort of time to expect. There was really no plan apart from you know, the advice I was getting from others and what I knew I had within me. And so I was stoked to finish, really. And I thought, you know, if I could just get rid of those toilet stops, then maybe I could, you know, get somewhere with this sport as far as an age grouper goes. So, yeah.
I'm having a quiet chuckle to myself because I can hear the eyeballs rolling through the podcast of somebody listening to this and going, he had three long toilet stops and he finished bang on 10 hours. I get lots of emails, Damon, of guys and girls who are chasing the Kona dream, but their first one maybe wasn't close to 10 hours. Maybe it was 13 or 14 hours. But I've also heard lots of stories of people who finished in those sort of times and went on to qualify. So just because you didn't go 10 hours in your first one doesn't mean you can't get to the Big Island.
Oh, that's right. You know, there's so many variables. Believe me, though, apart from those toilet stops, I didn't have anything else left in me. So, yeah, that's there was nothing left to give. And maybe they helped me to go faster in other parts of the race because I was actually having a rest during those stops. But yeah, it's true. Times mean nothing, really. Conditions, who turns up on the day, what happens to all those other individuals, you've just got to give it your best shot and ignore the time. I did New Zealand Ironman recently, and you're probably aware of the conditions on the day. Really, you just had to turn your watch off and worry more about your pacing and handling the conditions than any sort of times. So, yeah, there's a big range in the times between races and even the same race on different years.
Yeah, no doubt. And that first one, what was the biggest lesson you learnt out of that first one?
Oh, the biggest lesson. That's a good question. I think biggest lesson I learnt was that I could do it. I think that's the first lesson. I mean, I go in it to see what would happen. So the lesson taught there wasn't a negative lesson, it was a positive lesson. So it was telling me, yep, you're good to go for next year. And I guess the second lesson was just to be more careful about what I eat before the race and during the race, I guess.
Absolutely. When was the seed for Kona planted in you, Damon?
Look, the second time I raced Cairns, it was, I have to say, I was really just, I remember running with someone in my age group about halfway through the run, and I didn't ask him, but he told me that I was now sixth and he was seventh, and I just remember punching the air thinking, yes, I've made the top 10. This is good for me. It's, you know, let's just finish it now, and I'm absolutely stoked. So I finished it, and someone called me and said I'd come third. So I guess there was no intention of making Kona until perhaps the following year, but it came incidentally just because I was focused on what I was doing, and it happened a bit sooner than I expected. So, yeah, but after that, certainly once you've done one Kona, well, the seed's well and truly blossoming, and there's no stopping, I guess, the watering of that seed ever since.
Ironmans in general are pretty special. Your first one you've mentioned, and I think anyone who's listening to this probably feels the same once you've done it. It's just that first one never goes away. But your first Kona is pretty special as well. And tell me a little bit about that first experience on the Big Island.
Yeah, you know, you hear so much about it, and there's people that either haven't been that talk about it, or people that have been once, twice, 10, 15 times that you hear more from about it, and you've really just got to make it your own experience and just take each day as it comes. And I had absolutely no expectation, as I'm sure a lot of first-timers there, you know, they just want to enjoy the experience. And I remember it was, 2015, 15 and getting onto the run. And I remember thinking at the start of the run, because it was obviously a very hot year, but that was, you know, I just thought that was a standard, you know, weather pattern or standard race day weather-wise for Kona. I remember starting the run and thinking, this is ridiculous. Like, I live in Cairns. I live in a humid climate. I've trained in heat before, but this is next level. And I just remember thinking, just make the aid station. And so I ran all the aid stations, but each time I was just literally running for the next one, and I just could not believe how hot it was. And anyway, I finished, and I was so delighted to hear someone say that it was one of the hottest temperature or humidity days in Kona for several years. So, you know, I was just thinking that was a stock standard day, and thinking this is unbelievable. So I was quite happy to, you know, be told that it was a hot day. But, yeah, I was happy to finish, and it was an unforgettable experience for sure.
What makes that race special? There's something about it. It's mystical. I mean, you mentioned that it scares me. If someone who lives in Cairns and trains in Cairns says Kona's hot, I think everyone else is probably quivering in their boots. But what makes Kona so special?
I think it's a combination of the terrain. It's heaven and hell. It's beautiful, but it's deadly. It's something that is difficult to get your mind around. And you know, you hear a lot of professionals and top age groupers talk about, you know, the not trying to compete against the island and just respecting it. And when it's your day and you've done everything, that, you know, it'll you'll have a good race. And I used to just think that was all, you know, philosophical talk and, you know, people making it sound bigger than what it was. But it's having done it a couple of times now, heading there this year, I nothing could be truer. It really does. It is a mystical, magical place. And the people was the other thing that live there and get behind the race. Not just the people that live there, but the volunteers that come over from, you know, mainland America and other countries. That's it's an event. For me, it's like going to an Olympics and watching a well-run event. You know, it's just incredible.
You're in one of the most competitive age groups as well, and that makes for some interesting racing on the Big Island too. I say one of the most competitive. I mean, all the age groups on the island are competitive, but the ones between 40 and 50 are generally pretty fast. Your thoughts on those two age groups?
Yeah. When I started in the 40 to 44 age group, and when I went up last year to the next age group, 45, 49, and I thought, you know, things should get a bit easy, potentially a bit easier, but no, us old buggers, they're even more competitive and just as determined. And, you know, there's a lot that take it very seriously. And you really have to go about things almost in a professional manner in order to be competitive. And, yeah, it's tough out there. There's some really good athletes in that age group. And being an endurance sport, there's some tough minds that you're battling. And normally that used to be a strength of mine, that my mind could battle younger, you know, competitors. But the guys in my age group, that's they're on an equal footing, and their minds are just as tough. So you've just got to do the work. Yeah. So it's quite scary sometimes to see how good some of them are.
Absolutely. What have you still got? Have you got unfinished business in Kona? I mean, what's the ultimate goal? Have you had the perfect race there? Is it still out there? Is that what you're chasing?
Yeah, it's funny, perfect race, it's almost a...
Is there such a thing?
Yeah, that's right. Definitely, Brad. Yeah, I think last year I was certainly happy with my time. I was happy with my place. I was hoping to maybe, you know, get in the top 20. That was a goal. So to get in the top 10 and finish ninth, I was, you know, very happy with. But, you know, being competitive, we always like to look back and analyze the race. And, yeah, there's certainly places where there's always, you know, someone like myself room to improve. I'm still relatively – I might be old, but I'm still relatively new to the sport. So I'm still sort of getting my head around it. The bike is certainly a big aspect of mine that I've been working on to try and develop strength just to, you know, shave a few minutes. Obviously the swim, you know, I think I can be smarter and build my endurance strength on the swim. I've always been a fast, short leg swimmer, but it's just the longer distance for the swim. So, yeah, that's certainly another aspect I've worked on, and the whole time just maintaining that the finishing leg with the run, just maybe working on just shaving a couple of minutes there as well. So I've always finished Kona the last few kilometres running very strong. So I think that my race planning can be strategised just a little bit better. Not that I think I've done anything wrong so far. You're always learning. That's it.
Yeah, absolutely. And as far as the things you're working on right now, you mentioned your bike, and if you look at your splits, I mean, your run time's right up there. If you look at the top 10 of the age group, I think there are only two guys quicker than you in that top 10 on the run. But your bike is I don't want to say it's letting you down, but that is the discipline that's a lot slower than the others. Is that where you spend most of your time and focus?
Yeah, that's true, Brad. I think this... this year I have, or since Hawaii last year, I have, you know, since my rest, I've really been focusing on putting in more quality hours and mileage on the bike. Running, I know what pain is in a run. I'm just still learning how to ride. So just still learning about what is a manageable threshold for me on the bike. It's a huge learning area for me. So I think that I can certainly ride better whilst maintaining the run. It's just learning more about myself, and that's, of course, what you love about the sport is, you know, you're learning about yourself all the time in a race. So, yeah, for sure, the bike's a focus.
You mentioned as well getting older, not that you're old by any stretch of the imagination, you're still in your 40s, but what are some of the struggles that come with that? Obviously, as you get older and things tend to start slowing down, what are some of the struggles there for you?
I think certainly I've been fortunate as far as injuries go. I wouldn't say I've had any major injuries that have disrupted any preparations, but I think you've got to be pretty lucky not to have any niggles and things that can develop into injuries. So I'm very fortunate. My partner, she's a physio as well, and I can discuss things with her. But after my first Cairns Ironman, my first Ironman race, you know, I was very much aware of, you know, how I pulled up, and I started an intense sort of stability muscle sort of building exercises for stability for a few months before I even started running or riding again. And so I think, yeah, certainly my recoveries and stretching, rolling, massage, you know, there's probably just as much, if not more, of that going on than any time on the road or treadmills or trails or in the pool, that's for sure.
What's left to achieve? What are you chasing?
I think what's left to achieve is, I can't say the perfect race because I think that's, that can psychologically, send people to their grave prematurely trying to get the perfect race. I think as long as nothing's ever going to go completely perfectly, because the mind's a greedy thing sometimes in a race. If you feel good, it's very hard not to want to just push it that extra 1 or 2%. But I think if I can stick to within my limitations of my plans and things like that, I think if I can make a top five then in Hawaii, then I think I'd be more than satisfied, Brad.
Sounds brilliant. Well, Damien, thank you for your time and sharing your journey into the sport with us. I look forward to getting you on to talk a little bit about the individual disciplines and some of the things you're working on and what you've learnt. And we'll save that for another day, though. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, mate. Cheers.
What a cool story. Thanks for sharing that with us, Damien. Look forward to catching up in a week or so's time to chat a little bit about your swim. But before we go, a quick iTunes review for you. We're getting lots of those in too, and that really does help us. One in from Lister Mister in the United Kingdom. 5 stars saying, Brad Brown's The Kona Edge is informative and inspirational in equal measures. Brown's interviews give a rare insight into how mere mortals in the triathlon world make it to Hawaii. The production quality of TKE easily matches the strength of its content and will leave you trying to work out just how he manages to publish so many episodes. Keep it going, BB. Lister Mister, I have secret powers, and I don't train as much as I should. So that's why we have the patron sort of page, because if I can get some help, I can actually employ someone so I don't have to do all the work. So that's what I'm hoping we can do with Patreon. And we're almost halfway there to me being able to cover the costs and then look at possibly getting someone in to help, which will help me hugely so that I can become an athlete and no longer be a fatlete. So that's it for today's podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to catching up again tomorrow. Cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for The Kona Edge.